Appleseed Collective, live in Studio S here on WKAR's Current State. These guys are good. They're here from Ann Arbor today, ahead of another East Lansing performance tomorrow at the Pumpstock Festival here in East Lansing. Andrew Brown, Eric O'Daly, Brandon Smith, and Vince Russo, Appleseed Collective. More from the band, more music from the band, and we'll get to know these guys a little bit better before the hour is through here on Current State's Live Music Friday. I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome to our program. 2 days ago, we learned more about a proposed $133 million overhaul of a key CATA bus route between downtown Lansing and Okemos. The agency says passengers make a total of 1.7 million rides a year on Route 1. Now, supporters want to use that government money to turn Route 1 into a bus rapid transit line featuring dedicated lanes for buses and cars, as well as for left turns and U-turns. Others oppose the plan, expecting worse traffic and fewer shoppers in some stores near that route. They also complain of a lack of awareness and oversight of the BRT proposal. Two of those opponents join me now. Shirley Decker is the co-owner of Mertz Meats on Grand River in Okemos. Welcome, Shirley.
Thank you.
And Sherry Martin is an Okemos resident. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you.
Deb Alexander is the executive the assistant executive director of CATA, and her very first point on her visit here on Wednesday was that CATA has to increase capacity. Apparently, its data show that ridership is going to increase, and it has to make some kind of change to its transportation infrastructure to accommodate these future riders. So a lot of this project, I think, is pegged on that assertion. Are you generally in agreement with that or generally in disagreement with that?
Well, her statement was that they're at capacity now on Route 1. I dispute that just from visualization of the buses that go by that are never full. I've never seen a full bus on Route 1. So I dispute that statement alone.
I brought that up with Deb here on Wednesday. Anecdotally, it's not uncommon to hear people make that comment. Sherry, do you generally contest that as well?
Thank you, Mark. I agree with Shirley. I've been a resident of Okemos for over 18 years, and when I moved here, one of the things that I noticed was big CATA buses riding up and down the Tri-City area, empty or near empty all the time, and so. Taking note of that, I travel up and down Corridor 1 or Route 1 all the time. The only time I see full buses is when MSU is in full session and the peak times during in that very tight East Lansing-Chandler corridor. And I believe that can be easily remedied by additional buses. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, all the outlying areas and all the feeders into Route 1 and even Route 1 itself, I came that way this morning. The bus had two people on it. It generally is empty.
Now, we'll make clear that CATA claims to have a good deal of data, and I know it has access to a lot of studies and data that would contrast with your view here. We're not going to dive into that data here and now, but anecdotally, I think you make a valid point. It's not uncommon to hear people say that. This is also a lot about traffic impacts. Let's hear another of Deb Alexander. Well, we're not going to hear another of Deb Alexander's most basic assertions. I will try to paraphrase here. She says that the dedicated lanes for buses and the dedicated lanes for cars would increase capacity. How do you feel about that assertion?
I think that is probably true. However, with that being said, the buses will have the capability of stopping the lights or turning the lights on, the stoplights. And so when a bus approaches a red light, they will be able to turn that light green to go through. That means the bus...
That will be in the control of the bus driver.
That's correct. And they have told us specifically that the cars coming the other way or against traffic will have to wait for two cycles to continue on their way. So while the buses can continue on their way and maybe the traffic going that way, the cars and traffic the other way will have to sit through two cycles of lights to continue on their way. She called it a smoother operation. I call it a debacle.
Well, let's hear Deb Alexander's own words here. Here she is on Wednesday, again explaining that dedicated lanes for buses and for cars would help increase capacity on Route 1. Here she is.
All of our traffic models indicate, as I've said, that there's an increase in the amount of capacity and the smooth operation of the auto lanes because you remove the frequently stopping buses from those auto lanes today. So one might argue that the buses are part of what is causing the volume, what appears to be lots of volumes and stoppages on the corridor today. When we stop, cars behind us don't want to sit there, so you make an erratic movement to go around the bus. So all of that causes a less an unsmooth operation.
Sounds logical enough, Sherry.
It does, although none of us have had access to those traffic studies. So as we all know, you can pick points out that make your case. I disagree also with the contention because they're going to install 9 more traffic lights down that 8-mile corridor. They're going to prohibit drivers from turning left except at intersections down that corridor. That's going to create U-turns. It's going to create problems for businesses and shoppers who want to go into those businesses. And the delivery trucks that need to go in and out of those businesses are going to have to go straight past their company. They're going to have to turn in a U-turn fashion or turn down the perpendicular street, come back around. That's going to create all kinds of traffic snarls, not to mention the light signaling situation that Shirley mentioned. All the drivers that want to turn onto Grand River or East Lansing will be waiting 1, 2, 3 light cycles before they can make that turn. Traffic will back up at those intersections in an unsatisfactory way.
Now, there will still be, as I understand it, what are called free-flowing left turns throughout much of the route. They will be, they will end, apparently, in 2 stretches on Michigan Avenue between Grand and Detroit Street. And this is what Cata refers to as free-flowing left turns. They will be removed on Michigan Avenue between Grand Avenue and Detroit and on Grand River in East Lansing between Brookfield and Okemos Roads. And as you referred to, Sherry, the BRT project proposes an additional 8 signalized intersections allowing both left turns and U-turns, which brings the total to 47. There are already 39 of those on Route 1. You know, there's a video on the CATA website. I'm sure you've seen it. And it allows for the left turns, it allows for the U-turns, and everything is, you know, it's an impressive video. It looks as smooth as it can possibly be. That hasn't persuaded you. Why not?
Because a lot of what's going on with CATA is a moving target. If they hear something that sounds detrimental, then they change it the next time you talk to them. We have not been privy to any of the studies, as Sherry mentioned. In fact, at a March 22nd meeting, there were no less than 15 to 18 people that stood up and asked questions, asked and voiced concerns, and we were to get responses to that. It is now 2.5 months later, and we still don't have responses to those questions and concerns. It's like I said, it's a moving target. We don't really believe anything that's going on because everything changes from week to week.
I think you've both expressed concerns about oversight of the plan. One or both of you have already suggested to me that CATA has, quote, too much authority to make this happen, that the public is having to play catch up on this. Why do you think the public is having to play catch up on this, Sherry?
From my understanding, CATA needs public support in order to get the funding that they seek. And so they had a number of charrettes with small groups of people. I understand that a lot of the same people attended charrettes over and over. But those of us that live along that corridor, have businesses and friends in that corridor, we were not made aware of this until my first awareness was at the beginning of this year. And when I called their offices, they claim that they've never heard any opposition. And the reason for that is because they haven't made this issue public. I agree with you. The renderings on their website look lovely. There's trees and there's all additional businesses. but they're not realistic. One of those renderings shows a small business or a kiosk in front of the Walgreens as it sits today on Grand River and Okemos Road. How can that happen? That's a parking area for those patrons. How are they going to put additional businesses along that corridor? They also claim that the BRT will bring in all kinds of new business. If you drive down that 8-mile corridor, there are very few sections that already are not developed or underdeveloped. In fact, I think there's only two. So none of those new businesses they speak of have been quantified at all.
Now, CATA defends the process by pointing out that they have held or participated in more than 40 meetings where attendees have had opportunities to offer input. This is a quote from CATA that I received yesterday. Public input has helped shape the BRT project as it stands today. It's had an active website for the project since its inception, which it claims goes back to 2009, 7 years ago. That website offers information and invites input and questions. It's an ongoing way for the public to provide input. You did allude to the charrettes. There have been other meetings. Why has it taken so long for everybody to get on board? I know I read about the charrettes. We've done stories about the charrettes on WKAR. What accounts for this delay, this catch-up?
They tell us that they sent letters out to all the businesses in Meridian Township that would be affected by this project. None of the businesses that I know, the owners, such as Playmakers, Leo's there and on Grand River and Okemos, none of us received letters. Meridian Township EDS person even said that he sent letters out. None of us got any letters. So I don't know why. They're saying that people have been notified about meetings and about this project when, in fact, we have not received any notification of it.
We're talking with two opponents, both based in Okemos or with a business in Okemos, one or the other here, of the bus rapid transit plan that CATA is pursuing for its heavily traveled Route 1. You've mentioned, Sherry, that maybe you've both mentioned that you have not had access to the studies that CATA sites in defending this plan. Is it conceivable that if you had access to those studies and maybe more data, that you might be persuaded? You appear firmly against it here today. If you had access to those studies and that data, is it conceivable you could change? You could be changed. Your minds could be changed.
Some of the studies that they're referring to is like Deb brought up on Wednesday, a study in Utah. What does that have to do with Lansing, Michigan, and their surrounding cities that will be involved? It's maybe 100,000 people. Whatever city she's talking about in Utah, if it's Salt Lake, we're talking millions in that area that would be affected by this. I understand what she's saying about doing studies, but some of the towns and cities that they're doing studies or getting those studies from are much larger and totally different than what Lansing and Meridian Township are.
Continue, Sharon.
Sure. I would be very interested in seeing the studies. I'm going to be objective, of course, and would be interested in what the origin of those studies, but I remain unconvinced that a city, Ingham County, has 280,000 residents as of its 2010 census. CATA claims they have 1.3 million or 1.7 million riders. I don't know where those riders are coming from unless they count every jump off and on the bus. We're a county.
Well, I'm pretty sure they do. I'm pretty sure that's how they calculate.
They do, and the city of East Lansing has about 46,000 residents. We are not Cleveland. That 8-mile corridor is adequately serviced. CATA has an annual operating budget of over $47 million. They only currently collect about $5.7 million in fare income, so they're running a $37 million or more deficit every year paid by taxpayers, and now they want to spend another $133 million to rip up an 8-mile section of road that is already working fine.
Your organization, opponents to this, have a Facebook page. Remind us what it is.
Yes, Responsible Citizens for Responsible Public Transportation in Ingham County.
We want to continue this conversation because it covers an awful lot of ground. There are a ton of nooks and crannies to this discussion and a ton of considerations, important ones, that need to be made. But we did want to hear from both sides. We want to thank Sherry Martin and Shirley Decker of Mertz Meats. Sherry is an Okemos resident. Both are opposed to the proposal to build a bus rapid transit line on CATA's Route 1 between downtown Lansing and Okemos. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Mark.
It's Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. We're going to hear from Appleseed Collective here again in just a few minutes. Andrew Brown, Eric O'Daly, Brandon Smith, and Vince Russo, they got off to a rousing start here at the top of the hour. They're performing at Pump Stock here in East Lansing tomorrow, and I'm here with the godfather of Pump Stock, Smitty Smith, with his Cubs t-shirt on here. And you're the organizer and founder of the Pump Stock Festival. Tell us what is happening tomorrow.
Sure. Well, Mark, it's our 7th annual Pump Stock Festival of American Roots Music. We've got 5 bands on the main stage, 4 on a second stage from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. in Bailey Park in East Lansing.
Okay, very good. And these guys are amongst...
They're one of the big acts we've got coming in.
Yeah,
looking forward to it.
I'm not surprised. They really got us off to a great start here just a few minutes ago. Hours again, Smitty?
2 p.m. to 8 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday.
And where can people learn more about it?
If you Google Pump Stock, I tried it this morning, you'll get our Facebook page, facebook.com/pumpstock, and the event information off of Facebook.
Very good. Let's listen to Appleseed Collective. This is a track called Jackie.
Jackie's staring at the stars. Shoot me one and shoot it far. Feeding satellites in the sky, hanging off as space spins by. Whoa, bum 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 bum, bum bum bum, staring at the sky. Bum 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 bum, bum 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 bum, you and I. You put your hand in the rubber glove, hand in hand with the one you love. He was missing, so was I. Prisoner still on the ground, I lie. Whoa, bum 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 bum, bum bum bum, staring at the sky. Bum 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 bum, you and I, you and I. what's working, learn what's good. Are you gonna come down downstairs? Lay down here and here I wait. Whoa, bum 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 bum, staring at the sky.
Appleseed Collective on Current State's Live Music Friday. The song is called Jackie. And more from the band, who will be performing, by the way, at the Pumpstock Festival tomorrow afternoon in East Lansing, here on Live Music Friday on WKAR's Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. Glad you're here for our first Friday in June broadcast. It feels good. We are in the last days of high school graduation season here in East Lansing. Six graduating seniors are concluding a unique program they've been involved with since elementary school. These graduates are part of the inaugural class of the Edgewood Village Scholars Program. Each of them lives in Edgewood Village, an affordable housing complex that caters to many groups, including the elderly and disabled. This program offers intensive, personalized academic support and a variety of service opportunities, and all six of this year's graduates are heading off to college in the fall. Joining me to talk here about the Edgewood Village Scholars Program is its director, Jonathan Rosewood. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
Sounds like an interesting lineup, and this is your first crop of graduates and graduates, right?
This is the first class to graduate from the Edgewood Village Scholar Program, so we're really excited. So we're happy to be on the show and talk about the program, talk about the community, and just see what people can do to help us.
We had another, I think she's a volunteer with your program. She's somehow connected to it, Judy Gardy, on the program here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we were actually talking about Park Lake and keeping Park Lake clean and sprucing it up and what have you. But I know we talked a little bit about the Scholars Program on her visit. Some context first. Remind our listeners what Edgewood Village is and what makes it unique.
All right, so Edgewood Village is a affordable housing complex. We have 135 units where we have people that are handicapped and from all areas of walks of life, they can live there. It was started in 1972. And basically, the reason why it was started was Mr. John Dooley, who was Ms. Judy Gardy's father. He wanted a housing complex where everyone can live in East Lansing and have an affordable housing and also be able to have the same resources as others in East Lansing. So that's really his mission, for the people that live in Edgewood to be able to have resources and opportunities just like the community members in East Lansing.
So our Edgewood scholars grew up in Edgewood Village, and they've attended high school where? All over the place, or East Lansing High School, or what?
Well, they all started off in the East Lansing schools. But like Mr. Dooley's goal, we believe in upper mobility. So some parents and students were able to move outside of the village and go to different schools. So right now we only have three students that's outside of the district, one in Okemos, one in Hazlitt, and one in Grand Ledge. And the rest of the students go to East Lansing schools. So our program starts off in the fifth grade. They fill out an application. They must have a 2.0 GPA. They must have two letters of recommendations, one from a teacher or a counselor and one from a community member. And what happens is we mostly get our students from Donley Elementary, and we just recently received some students from White Hills Elementary. So they start off in the elementary schools in East Lansing, go to McDonald Middle School. That's where a majority of our middle school students are. Mm-hmm. And then they are, most of them go to the East Lansing High School. So they matriculate through the East Lansing schools unless they move out outside of East Lansing.
But just to be clear, this is basically academic prep. It's preparation. Or am I wrong? Are there scholarship dollars that are attached to this as
so well? So there's what we do this year with our seniors, we've been helping them get scholarships from different organizations. Recently, we've been getting scholarships from the Okemos Hazlitt Rotary Club, which they usually provide a scholarship for our Scholar of the Year. So that's one scholar that has done awesome work throughout the whole year, and we choose them and they get a scholarship. But basically, our program helps our students in academics. We set up personal tutors and work with SAT, ACT prep. So if they need help on the test, we get tutors for them. Also, we take college visits, college tours, because we believe in our goal is four-year institutions. We want all of our students to go to four-year. If they so happen to go to a two-year, we're happy about that, but our goal is 4 years. So we do the tutoring, we do the SAT prep, we do college visits, we bring in professionals to come talk about their careers, to show the students what they have to do to get to the next level. So if they wanted to be a radio host like yourself, we would have you come in, speak to the students about what you had to go through, what type of schooling you had to do, what type of internships that you had to have, mm-hmm. and what college did you have to go to, and how did you get here? So those are just some of the things that we do in our program.
Now, do these six students, do these six Edgewood scholars, do they represent all of the graduating high school seniors? Are these all the graduating high school seniors that have passed through Edgewood, or are they a part of the total group?
Well, this year, they're the only seniors that graduated.
So all six of the kids who started out in Edgewood Village who applied for this program are all. It's not like you have seniors who grew up in Edgewood who are not Edgewood scholars. Every
Correct.
Single one of them. You're batting 1,000 here.
Yeah.
In the first year. Okay.
In the first
okay.
year.
Very good. We are talking about the inaugural graduating class of the Edgewood Village Scholars Program. This is a college prep initiative run by the Edgewood Village Nonprofit Housing Corporation here in East Lansing. It serves a variety of clients in affordable housing, including the elderly and disabled. My guest is Jonathan Rosewood, director of the Scholars Program. You rely on volunteers and partnerships to some extent. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. I know for our program, we rely highly on volunteers to come in and speak to the students, to tutor the students. This year alone, we have partnered with Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated to come in and lead different workshops. We've partnered with People's Church, huge, huge, huge partner. We are blessed. They allow us to drive their vehicles to different college visits. So the furthest college visit that I've taken the students on is to Chicago, and we visited the University of Chicago and Northwestern University.
Wow! Yeah.
So thank People's Church for doing everything. We also have services from Gateway Youth Services who come and talk to our students about stress and bullying. So we definitely rely on a lot of people, a lot of volunteers to come in and just work with our young people. We do understand our staff at the Network Center. We only have 4 to 5 staff members, and we have a lot of residents. So we definitely depend on the volunteers' help. I know you spoke of Miss Judy Gardy.
Correct.
And Miss Donna Kapowitz. Those are also volunteers, but they are on our scholar committee. And we have different people on the scholar committee from different areas of life, counseling, college level, Lansing Community College. So we just bring people in so that therefore we can help our students and parents to make sure that we're able to reach our goal to a four-year institution.
Now, remind us again where your scholars are attending college. I know some are coming here to MSU.
Go green, go white.
Where else?
So we have 4 going to Michigan State University. We have 1 going to University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And we have 1 going to Lansing Community College.
How common is this kind of model in education? This just strikes me as unique. You know, the way it melds, the way it combines housing and education.
I think this is important. We're not the school, but we are a community center within the housing community. And I think it's important. I've been around here for the past, 6 years, and I've seen nothing like it. I believe it is the first of its kind, unless we're counting like the Big Boys and Girls Club or maybe the YMCA, but no other housing units have this type of program. So it's very beneficial. We're basically just a support for the teachers in the schools. We understand that teachers and counselors, they have a huge workload. So they may not be able to get to all students, but at our community center, since in our program, we only take students that live in Edgewood Village, we can work with them, help them with the schoolwork, with the testing. So therefore, when they go to school, they can get right into the books and not have to really worry about failing or anything like that.
Jonathan, do you think this is a model that could be replicated? That other, subdivisions, villages, other entities could learn from and could use?
I would say yes. I believe so. And the reason why I say that, because I myself actually would like to do this. Like, I'm from the city of Detroit, and I would love to take this type of model, this program, back to the city of Detroit and work in different housing units and help students understand, look, you can go to college or you can get a good job. You don't have to be in the streets. You don't have to be doing silly stuff. Let's go ahead and get you that extra support. But the only way it will work, if volunteers come in and they decide that they want to help the community, that's the only way that it will work.
Yeah. Jonathan Rosewood is the director of the Edgewood Village Scholars Program. That is a college preparatory program designed for students living at the Edgewood Village Housing Unit in East Lansing. And we want to thank Jonathan for being here today. Best of luck in the future and with this project.
Thank you, Mark, for having us. Appreciate you.
It's Current State on WKAR, and it's a live music Friday here. Appleseed Collective is the band who's joining us, and you're hearing from periodically throughout the course of the hour. We're going to hear a track called Darling.
Could not be. Darling, won't you look at life with a wide angle lens and a paring knife? Would you cut what you don't need despite that it might bleed? Did you dream of a love so true as the sunlit sky or superior? Trees and the laughing lake, and has your heart become the space in which this all takes place? Or are you lost in a maze of eyes, immune to June's most azure skies, praying someday you'll break through to a love so pure and true? Stay.
Well, a lot of energy there at the start of the day from Appleseed Collective. The track is called Darling, and we welcome again Appleseed Collective. Andrew Brown, Eric O'Daly, Brandon Smith, and Vince Russo. Is this the earliest in the day you've ever been asked to perform?
No. We've done the radio before.
Okay.
We've done this movie.
Oh. Yeah, we've done this. We've done the early in the morning thing before, but yeah, it's a little hard to wake up about 3 hours after you normally go to sleep.
How'd you guys get together here?
Oh, well, it's actually kind of a crazy story. It's the tale of two car accidents, actually.
Oh my!
Sort of a
cosmic car crash.
Cosmic car crashes across the United States that actually brought us together.
Well, we've got to hear the story now.
my dad lives actually north of Lansing, about 45 minutes from here, and I was living out at his farmhouse at the time. I think I was about 20, and Brandon had just gotten back from hitchhiking across the whole United States of America for a couple years. And he was playing in a band with a guy, and that guy ended up getting in a car accident that made it so he couldn't play with Brandon anymore. So Brandon was in Ann Arbor at the time, sort of just walking around, playing the fiddle, playing the mandolin, looking for a group to play with.
Day and night.
Day and night.
Wandering the streets, looking for my crew.
Itinerant musician.
And then I was commuting. I was working in Ann Arbor, but kind of living out at my dad's house in north of Lansing. And I got in this car accident and totaled my car.
Two car accidents with Vince,
our percussionist.
Yeah, okay. with our percussionist, and so my car was.
They crashed into each other. I want to make it clear.
It was really. It was one of those things that you wake up the next day and you're like, did that have to happen?
Yeah.
But apparently, it did. So then I moved back to Ann Arbor, and it was because I had no car and I was living back in Ann Arbor that I was on the street one day. Brandon was outside of a coffee shop playing violin with a mutual friend of ours who had a guitar, and that guy ran inside to use the bathroom and was like, here, hold my guitar. And me and Brandon played about 25 seconds of music together, and then I walked away, and then he spent about a month looking for me, and then the rest is history.
You didn't have a car accident, so you could run into each other, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
nothing would happen if you didn't have car accidents
here. So it's, a silver lining, I guess, of everything.
Where did the name the Appleseed Collective come from?
We drew straws out of a hat. We wrote on these... we wrote a bunch of words on slips of paper, and we just threw it in a hat, and we pulled it out, and that's what came out.
You will be playing at the Pump. Where are most of your live performances? How far afield from Ann Arbor, for example, do you travel?
The continental U.S. so far is as far as we've gone. We've gone to New York City all the way out to San Francisco. We went out to the West Coast once, but I would say... mostly it's the eastern side of the states, up and down the East Coast, the Midwest, Colorado we do a lot, Florida we do a lot, around Michigan, of course, a lot.
Florida in the wintertime.
Nice call.
We're kind of premature snowbirds in that way, you know.
How long have you been together?
Since its inception, since the baby steps, since we were playing in little tiny coffee shops and in our hippie friends' houses in Ann Arbor 5 years, yeah. About.
Okay. Five and a half.
Five and a half, yeah, I guess. I that answer to that question is always changing.
Andrew,
you are
the son of a Motown session musician. Talk to us about your dad. And the influence he's had on you.
He has the influence of just, I grew up listening to him play piano, and actually I kind of started late. I was 18 when I was like, I asked my dad how he got so sweet, and he was like, well, I practiced scales and arpeggios for 8 hours a day for 2 years straight, and then I played music for 35 years after that. But his name's Doug Brown, and he had a hit record, on Michigan radio stations in 1980 called, or the hit song was Give It to the One You Love, and it was like an R&B and soul record. He played with the Four Tops on a few of their tours when their career was a little bit a little bit down in the dumps as compared to how they had been doing.
Sure.
And so they didn't have enough money to hire the best rhythm section in Detroit, which was the Funk Brothers. So they hired the second best rhythm section in Detroit, which my dad was
included. Your dad. Well, we've got time for one more song and a little bit more chat here. Let's hear Appleseed Collective. This is called Bad Man.
This next one is off of our new Tour Tapes EP, which we just released and we'll have available at Pumpstock tomorrow. I'm a bad man. My baby's bitch, I don't blow right off my hands. But that's alright by my baby, cause baby likes that man. But that's alright by me, baby. If that's alright by my baby, said that's alright and that's okay. Cause my baby likes it that way. And my baby brings out the devil in me, and all my friends agree. My baby brings out the devil in me, cause that's what baby likes to see. Oh, baby, she wants me bossy. And baby always calls a bluff. And baby gets what baby wants, and baby never has enough. She wants me sweet and gentle, and baby she wants love, yeah. And baby gets what baby wants, and baby never has enough. And my baby brings out the devil in me, and all my friends agree. My baby brings out the devil in me, cause that's what baby likes to see. Altar in the gates of hell, and never knowing which way we're going. No, baby doesn't like to tell. Oh, baby can't be caged now. She got a twisted little heart. Baby loves the tides of mine, and she loves to turn them all apart. Now let's play the game. I show baby how it's done. And baby likes to get caught, and that's why baby likes to run. Let's pretend that I'm the one whose affection never shown, whose hands you held her rather when you cried at home. Yeah, I'm a bad man. My baby's bitch, I don't blow right out my hands. But that's a wrap on my baby, cause baby likes that man. But that's a wrap on me, baby. If that's a wrap on my baby, I said that's alright and that's okay. And my baby likes it just that way. One more time, I said that's alright, that's okay. And baby likes it just that way.
Bad Man, Appleseed Collective, performing live here in WKAR Studio S here on Current States, Live Music Friday. Eric O'Daly, Andrew Brown, Brandon Smith, and Vince Russo. You have a new 5-song EP called The Tour Tapes. Tell us a little bit about that.
We recorded it last year, actually on an entire tour out in October. We were out on the East Coast, sort of Northeast East Coast region.
These are live performances, though,
we recorded
all live. Yep.
Every single show for a while. We were just taping all the shows, and then we hit the road really hard in 2015, and we wanted to sort of give people a little bit of a taste of what we've been up to. Before this year, we're going to be recording our next studio album, and so we kind of sifted through. I spent about a good 2 weeks sifting through all this tape of our shows and found what I felt and what we all felt like were the most magical moments of 2015.
We had a friend who came on as a documentarian, and he did a whole video series. So you can actually go and look up on YouTube. If you search for Tour Tapes, you can find all of those songs, except for one. I think we still have one left in the bag.
You've already logged your first documentary. That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, they're kind of like little webisodes where there's a song and a little bit of documentary footage.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, if you... Yeah, If you look up on our on
appleseedcollective.com/tourtapes.
Yeah, that's got a link to it. And also you can find our music on appleseedcollective.com.
The other previous or another previous CD is also live at the Ark.
Yes, that
recorded
was
recorded in Ann Arbor, I take it.
Of course, at the historic venue.
All of you guys have got chops. How many of these chops did you pick up after Appleseed Collective was formed, and how many chops did you have when you formed the band?
I had 27 chops when the band started, and now I have about 53.
yeah,
he's doubled his chops.
Yeah. Chops doubled up.
Okay.
I only had 5 chops when the band started, but now I have 42, so I have a greater percentage, but I'm still behind in chops.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're keeping track, so I hope you are.
Good. We'll see you next time we're on the radio. We'll let you know. It'll be like.
We want to keep a
WKAR chops update.
Put that on your website. You know, it's like
a
dashboard.
Our band. We got between the four of us, 211 chops.
Okay.
Eric, I was going to say Eric on bass and myself on at least an upright bass and myself on a washboard. Neither of us were foreign to music before that, but we'd never played these particular instruments before the Appleseed Collective.
Wow. So you guys picked up all your chops, or almost all of them.
100% of my upright bass chops.
Gotcha. Brandon, you've got to tell us a little bit more about hitchhiking across the United States.
Well, it was exciting.
One fell swoop.
Still possible. One swell swoop. I went from East Coast to West Coast, landed in Portland for a little while. It's still possible to do it. I think the thing that it taught me, the lesson I took away from it was how to really get a quick judge of character, because you got to be quick. You got to be quick to decide if you're going to get in a vehicle with this human being.
Yeah.
And I made a few choices where later I might or might not have regretted it.
What most memorable moment from the hitchhike?
Probably like screaming down the, you know, the I, what is it on the West Coast, that highway that goes
I-10?
Up?
Highway 1.
The Highway 1. Yeah. It's like a 50 mph ocean road. This guy was driving like 75, talking a mile a minute in his truck, and I don't think he was quite all right, you know. He was talking about angels, and I was just hoping that I wouldn't see any.
Sounds like a California moment to me. Well, we want to thank Appleseed Collective. More information about them, their music, their chops tally, everything at appleseedcollective.com. We're going to have these guys play us out here right after I remind you about Monday's show. Maybe you've heard of something called ecoacoustics. It's all about hearing the science of listening to both natural and man-made sounds and their relation to the environment. There's an international conference coming next week to Michigan State University devoted to ecoacoustics. We will listen and learn from the conference organizer. That and lots more planned for Monday here on Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. We're glad you could join us today. We're going to just let Appleseed Collective demonstrate their chops to play us out. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mark. We'll see you all in Lansing tomorrow at Pumpstock.
Never fell a victim much to vine. Tobacco was not a vice of mine. While I may put on a little shine under the moon, I always stop at one or maybe two. Seems that spring came earlier this year, and his flowers sprung, I bloom clean and clear. But the rain drips down the writing on the wall, and teeter on the edge until you fall. It was in the summer that I knew that I was really hooked through and through. It wasn't till the fall that it came clear that my